Hi, welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where I'm talking to Michael Murdoch and Robbie Dale from StoryCube. Now, we're talking about storytelling. That's in marketing, not reading books. You know what I mean, don't you? Thanks for downloading. Now, storytelling is one of those buzzwords that floats around the marketing world, and you see lots of marketing gurus on Twitter telling you should be storytelling. But what does this really mean? You know, like for the marketing person who's sat at a desk every day doing their job. Now, in this episode, I'm talking to Michael Murdoch and Robbie Dale. They're the co-founders of StoryCube, which they describe as a framework that helps organizations explain what they do through storytelling. Now, it's a fascinating chat. It gives you lots of ideas on how to plan your content and also your sales strategies as well. So check out their website at storycube.co.uk. That's storycube.co.uk. Now, can I quickly mention that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free. I'd love it if you could give the pod a quick shout on social media. Subscribe via your favourite podcast app. It's on all of them. You can check out more podcasts at jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Now, the first question was to Robbie, and I asked him to explain exactly what storytelling is.
I think we talk, actually, we make a very specific point of this in StoryCube's materials, and any time we talk to, whether it's clients or people going through our course materials or coming to events or so on, we make a very specific point where I say, stories are not vague, fluffy, sort of, you know, get the crayons out and let's start trying to do something exciting. They're actually about being as specific and as pointed as possible. And if you think about anything from, you know, parables in the Bible through to obviously good advertising, but, you know, think of a small child trying to sort of convince you to buy them an ice cream or whatever. You can probably tell when this is recorded based on that example. The whole purpose of it is to pull levers, right? It's actually to sum up things that are probably slightly, fluffy and vague and, you know, can deal with lots of complexity and so on, but to bring them together in a way that actually gets to a point and actually therefore makes a very clear statement of intent, you know, to who's listening. And from a marketing perspective, and from the story that a brand needs to tell or an organization needs to tell, it's all about how do you communicate the value that you have to the people that you want, potentially other organizations that you want, but there'll still be people making those purchase decisions. How do you communicate that value so they understand it and see how it's going to solve problems they have, you know, or challenges that they're trying to deal with? And I think sometimes the confusion, or certainly the confusion we've tried to deal with by creating StoryCube, has come from a situation whereby people are thinking, okay, you know, I've got to channel my inner, I don't know, James Joyce or J.K. Rowling or whoever it is that you look to for your storytelling sort of ability, or filmmakers, or all of these wonderful things that exist in the world. But actually, it's going down and saying, no, this is looking at how you can structure something so that people can understand with a simple beginning, middle and end, the reality of what it is you have to offer. And so they can see how that fits into their life. Can you, of course, bring that to life in all kinds of wonderful, weird and colourful, exciting ways? Yes, of course you can. But it's got to start with something that is much more functional.
Yeah, storytelling is one of those. It is one of those fluffy words. If you follow all the marketing gurus on social media and you've been to talks and watched them all, it's all you've got to be storytelling, and it's all like this big fluffy thing. And then you actually get down and you sit there at your desk in your office or at home at the kitchen table, wherever it is, and you think to yourself, well, I've got a story to tell now about some steel widgets or something. So give me an example. A really quick example of what a basic story would be around a product or a brand.
Well, when we with StoryCube is a framework, right? To get to the heart of kind of how we communicate stuff, and it is six basic questions, which are: what problem do you solve? How do you solve it? What is the solution? What differentiates you from the other options, I suppose, that are around? What is the motivation that is behind what you're doing? And then also, how do you reach your audience? How do you connect to them? And what are the obstacles that might get in your way? And really, how do you turn them into opportunities? But those first four elements: what's the problem? How do you solve it? why is this different from, you know, other things that solve the problem similarly, or maybe other options that people are looking at, and potentially what motivates you. I mean, obviously, if you're quite a purpose-driven organization, a not-for-profit, for example, or, you know, anything from Patagonia to the Body Shop and those kind of examples, then those are the things to put in there. But I again, going back to the simplicity point, the missing piece, I suppose, sometimes, a little bit like, I don't know, like a joke without a punchline, is, you know, a brand story, but without a clear value proposition fundamentally, but, you know, problem, solution, and differentiation. And if you can hit those three things, is it going to be the most exciting thing in the world? You know, if you just literally sort of say, well, we make steel widgets, you use them to stop your, I don't know, piece of machinery falling to bits, and they're cheaper than others for the same quality. Well, no, it's not that exciting, but do you know what? It does the job it's supposed to do, which is to get people to step up. Now, of course, the difference or the difficulty comes when you're not talking about steel widgets, which are better prices, but you're trying to differentiate, for example, as a web designer among thousands of others, or you're trying to sort of tell a story about, you know, why your particular Italian restaurant is the best, you know, in London, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think you bring up Patagonia, which is an ideal example, really, isn't it? Because they've been doing it for years and years and years, for decades now, haven't they? And they actually managed to get people to spend more money on the products. And they say, we are more expensive than everybody else, but this is why, this is what we do with some of that money.
Yeah, I guess it's about creating the value, isn't it? And sharing whatever story that is right for the entrepreneur, if it's that small, or the organisation as the team grows. And sometimes what we're thinking about in terms of StoryCube is what are the outcomes for these entrepreneurs and organisations. And we're looking for them to be able to inspire people. Maybe it's themselves, maybe it's the motivation they need. They want to motivate their team, inspire other partners to get involved. Or maybe it's the first customers. Sometimes it's about pitching for investment and funding and different options to help them grow their businesses. And obviously to sell as well, and to sell directly to customers. So the story is storytelling in an aspect that maybe later on the advertising campaign, the marketing campaign, can really build on that and become more whimsical. But in the early stages, we really think it's important to stick to the framework, make sure that you get the right elements in that story and tell them at the right time, so that you can, as an entrepreneur or the team in a small company, can actually create the conversation and start the dialogue with the customer, so that it encourages them to take whatever action that you want them to take, and so that they move to the next stage of that conversation. And most likely for most people, that's in terms of a sales funnel. So there are appropriate stories at different times, and it can be multiple stories for the same organization, depending on what message they want to communicate.
So how do you identify these kind of real problems that your product or service solves? Because this is kind of key, I suppose, to storytelling, isn't it? Trying to identify what the problems are, because the problem could be very simplistic. This is why we built this product. This is what it does. But there's a lot more to it than that. And there's a lot more problems that can be solved within just one individual product, aren't there?
Yeah, as Robbie said, I mean, there's two types of businesses. Normally there's the product side, which tends to be focused on one key problem, or should be at least. Whereas the service side, like accountants and web developers and creative agencies, law firms, there's multiple problems, and they're relatively common problems to solve. It doesn't mean that the solution is any less, and they couldn't be quite niche in that approach. But it is a little bit harder to work out exactly which problem there is. In terms of looking at the problem itself, and how to find out what problem that should be, it's all about research, market research, in terms of focus groups and interviews and online surveys, to keep talking to customers, particularly if they haven't started already, haven't started producing something. And that can go all the way through to test sales, to try one product, one small product. Perhaps a fashion label wants to have a full range of clothes, but they start with a pair of gloves and a hat, and see if the new material that they're using, for example, could be something that people want, and if that goes well, they build on it and create a full range. Same for food and beverage companies, and we've helped them in the past. They've started with maybe one jar of chutney and worked all their way through to a full product range based on the number of sales, the feedback, the iterations in the approach to what they're doing, and so that they can build on their success. And it kind of adds to the story as well. Their story will change over time.
I think with identifying the problem, I think a big element of all of this is being able to look from different perspectives and to accept that as consumers, you know, or, you know, businesses that are buying into stuff, but basically, you know, people that need things, there are a lot of different reasons that you want to go out and get hold of stuff. And the problem is going to probably fall into some of those categories. I think the functional stuff is kind of easy, right? You know, as we say, the widgets and the product stuff, as Michael says. But even then, you know, there's going to be a sense of, well, we invented this thing because nothing like this exists, right? Partly because of technological development, or maybe there's a you know, a shift in how society goes about things and so on. You go, okay, right, great, so there's a thing, and I'm googling for it or looking on Amazon or asking a shopkeeper, you know, to recommend something. Those will literally functionally solve a problem. At the other end, you've got things that are emotional, right? You know, people want to belong to a tribe, they want to feel happy, they want to be entertained, you know, all of these things. And you know, that's why you might spend £300 on a pair of headphones, or you might, you know, sign up to a service that, you know, delivers you content, but that doesn't have a sort of functional, you know, well, you know, what problems is solved to me? It's like, well, it makes me feel better about myself, maybe, or it, you know, educates me. And of course, you know, the list is sort of endless. And I think finding that stuff, as I say, is about being able to look from as many perspectives as possible, which, you know, to the point Michael's made, is about research. And I think, unfortunately, there's, you know, like most things in this life, you know, if we knew the answers to these kind of things without doing lots of testing and iterating and, you know, scratching of heads, then we'd all be billionaires, because we'd just roll out the ideas that work and go off and sit on our yachts. Although I get seasick very easily, so I wouldn't do that. But just sit in a nice garden.
You need a villa instead of a yacht.
A villa instead of a yacht. These would be the trying things that, you know, would have to worry about. But actually, the reality is that, you know, through anything from, you know, obviously asking people, well, you start off with your own assumptions, of course, but then through asking, you know, people who you think might be interested, but looking at what are people asking on Reddit and Twitter and Quora and those kind of websites where people are actively seeking answers to things. But then ultimately going out there into a marketplace and moving beyond, you know, people who are likely to help you out and say yes because they either like you or you've embarrassed them into it. And actually seeing how people respond and how they use those products, or what feedback you get from the services that are being given to people. Say, well, you know, I know you kind of sell your, you know, legal expertise as avoiding going to jail, but actually for me it's about, you know, peace of mind that I'm not going to lose money, or it's about, you know, having someone there to bounce ideas off who comes from a sort of a different framework of thinking. There might be different reasons, you know, why people are interested in what you do, but they will come down to them solving a problem, because the bottom line is you don't put your hand in your pocket or certainly give up your time and energy to, you know, pay for something that doesn't, you know, fix a challenge that you have or to add something into your life.
And it should be seen as a bit of a journey as well. And there's an added benefit as well. Research, market research, customer research can be seen as quite boring. But it's a good opportunity to talk to your customers if they exist already, if you already have some traction, or a good chance to talk to prospects and find out what they really, really want and what they expect from you as an organisation as well. And that's an opportunity to have that another discussion and potentially lead them through to a sale or whatever else, whatever other outcome that you're looking for. So, for example, there's normally the two sides of the problem. It's the pains. What do they want to stop happening as a result of using your product? And the gains. And the gains are a bit harder. It's the benefits, the outcomes that even the customer may not have realised. So, for example, a cleaner obviously cleans your house, but the save time is the benefit to go off and do something else you enjoy. Mm. Or the feeling of happiness that your house is immaculate and you can present it to guests when we're allowed to have a guest back in. Mm. So it's having a chance to talk to customers, if you're lucky enough to have some, and check in with them to see what their expectations were and what how that relates to the reality of what you delivered. And sometimes there can be real surprises. You didn't realize that some of the things you were delivering on are actually seen as quite unique and differentiators and things that your customers talk about, but you saw them as something that was quite normal. So that can be a factor to add into your story later on. I've got, okay, well, most customers like A, B, and C, so let's talk about that more, and let's put that front and center when we have our next proposal, our next marketing campaign, our next advert, or anything like that.
Do you think it's a good idea to enroll sort of like sales and support and existing staff into this sort of like search for these problems? Because obviously they're coming into contact with the customer a lot and asking, answering the questions.
100%. Yeah. I mean, you've got to use as much information as you possibly can. And actually, that's going to be one of the something that's going to set any organization apart. And even if you're just a solopreneur, you know, setting out your own, doing something, or you're much larger, the more data and information you have to work with, and the more you're willing to dig and go out there and kind of gain insight, the better it's going to be. And I think, you know, sometimes you'll find, and this is okay, you know, to accept that the problem is just straightforward, right? The problem is just functional. It's, you know, well, the reason that we use you as our gas and energy supplier is because you need gas and electricity. So there you go. So actually, the story there is going to lean less on that and is going to lean more towards the differentiations, basically, potentially the motivations, which is in itself a differentiator, but why you over other things. But as Michael's just touched on, I think, you know, we use the cleaning example quite often when we talk to people, just because it, you know, another example of that is that, you know, maybe if you're looking after your, you know, tiling better or your oven better because it's been cleaned regularly, it's not going to have to be replaced as often. So you're going to actually save money in the long run. That, you know, there's a whole range of things that are not obvious that come out of it, but they allow you to just have a much more nuanced, interesting conversation with people. Does that mean that when you literally have a flyer or a ad online, or you're talking to someone sort of elevator pitch style, you're going to say all of that? No, probably not, because they're going to say, well, can you clean? Are you local? You know, are you available? Is your price okay? Of course, those things are going to be important. But actually, when people are making a consideration between multiple things, showing that you actually understand the problem they have, not that you're just kind of parroting something that feels like the kind of problem people maybe have, that's going to be what makes a difference.
One of the parts of storytelling is kind of trying to make yourself stand out from the competition and stand out above them in a way. It's not just doing things faster and cheaper, is it?
No, they're good, that. Always good.
Now, the reason I said that, I was talking to somebody years and years and years ago, and they went to New York for a couple of weeks, and they went to get some photos developed. That shows how long ago it was. And he was talking to the guy in the store and everything, and it was like, 5 years ago we could get your photos developed in an hour and a half, 90 minutes. You can come in and collect them. Then there was a guy down the road who did it for an hour, so I had to match him. And then I decided to do it in 45 minutes. And now somebody else is doing it for 40 minutes, so everybody's now doing it for 35 minutes. And all you're doing is chasing that speed and making it cheaper. It's not the best way, is it?
But to go back to the point we just made, do customers even want that? You know,
yes.
Is that even practical? Because great, there may. I mean, if you were based in, say, an airport, and you realise that actually customers are very time sensitive because they may be. And again, we are having a conversation now set in 1985, which is wonderful. But in this context, why not? Is the example there. They want to, you know, they've got a film. They want to get it actually done there and then so they can look at those images on the flight home. Great. 35 minutes is going to probably make a difference over someone doing it in 60 minutes because you've got that confidence of where you go. But actually, most people, you know, they probably drop it in on the way to work. Maybe they pick it up on the way home. Maybe the next day. Maybe they don't even go into next week. I've got a prescription at the chemist right now. It's nothing hugely important, but I dropped in yesterday, didn't have it. They're like, oh, if you pop in tomorrow morning, we'll have it. I'll probably go and get it on Monday or something because that's just more convenient for me. So actually what I want in that case, or in the photos case, is to know with as much of a guarantee as is ever possible that I can trust them to deliver a quality service while doing that. And I think, as I say, it all goes back to understanding, you know, what that customer actually needs and wants. There is a reason why there are businesses that can sell you a T-shirt for £3 and people will desire them and want them because they fit into their budget, and because they're happy, I suppose, in that context, to turn a blind eye to the realities of what it takes to make a t-shirt for £3.
Yeah.
But also, you can buy a t-shirt for £300. Yeah. And there are people who desire that and see the value in that. Now, I would sit in the middle of those things. I think most consumers would. But, you know, it's about understanding intimately, and that's what comes from research, you know, what those differences are. And I think, you know, to you know, fast and cheap are always good, you know, and quality, those are going to be the three kind of key corners of the triangle, you know, that's often talked about in different contexts. But yeah, you know, great, we want these things. But you know, we've talked about purpose already, and companies like Patagonia and Tom's Shoes and others that operate in the fashion space, you know, they are trying to promote something slightly different. I actually just bought some barbecue sauce earlier, and I chose real life consumer action, and I chose Paul Newman's barbecue sauce because it said they give all the profits to charity. Now, I'm sure that is true, because I wouldn't say it on the bottle if they didn't. But I had no idea how to differentiate between them in the supermarket because I couldn't taste them. So I thought, wow, I'll go with this one, because at least if I don't like it, then something vaguely useful has happened.
I had no idea Paul Newman did barbecue sauce.
The man is obvious, you know, he's a barbecue sauce machine, as you know, in his later years, I think. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be different reasons for different people that they pull levers. And I think, you know, Michael touched on this already. There will be different stories that resonate with different people. And I think we always have to accept, and this is the reality of any strategy, right? You know, you're probably having to accept that you get rid of people as much as you draw people in. So having that, you know, if speed is the thing that you're all about, then the people who look at that and think, well, it's probably not going to be very good then, is it? Or it's going to be really expensive if you're going to get it done that quickly. They're not so interested. That's okay, as long as you know that the customer you're going for, you know, desires the things that you have on offer.
Yeah. Do you think that we sometimes default to faster and cheaper when we don't really know what we're offering?
Well, it's kind of the easy options, isn't it?
Yeah.
But as Robbie's saying, it starts with the problem that we need to solve. And part of that is talking to the right audience and knowing who your audience is. So that's why we begin with that in terms of the story cube. And the solution is a bit of an easy one. Most people have that in mind even before knowing what the problem is to solve. So as long as the solution is validated by the problem, that's a good way to go. And then it's the differentiation, or the differentiators that we say for StoryCube, that are most important. And part of that is just being different. So particularly if your solution is not that different in itself, but maybe the way you do it and how you do it and what motivates you to do it, that could be different. And again, that goes back to the service side industries, where agencies are generally doing the same sort of things.
Yeah.
And even if they're not, they appear to be by the people that are hiring them. And it's a very difficult decision to make to hire an agency without literally trying them for 2 or 3 months and then seeing what happens. But most companies don't have the budget to waste on something that's not going to be the right choice.
Yeah, I've come across quite a few social media management companies that are exactly like that. They don't have a kind of like a differentiator, really. It's just speed. And I was talking to one who was actually writing service level agreements into contracts to say that we will reply to messages within 1 minute, 24 hours a day. They've got teams 24 hours a day. And I'm just thinking to myself, you just fight it.
It's a bit of a race to the bottom, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit. And it's because you don't know how to differentiate yourself from the other 100 social media management companies who are all doing exactly the same thing as you.
It's a tricky one to scale, and it's a tricky one to keep up with in years to come, especially as everyone else or the majority will look at that and go, yeah, well, we could go faster and cheaper, just as you said before. I have seen some agencies also open up Slack communication and say that they're always available. It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I guess if it's on their terms and structured, it's okay. But if it's too open, you could be inundated and therefore the profits disappear and it's not sustainable.
Well, I think there's a really interesting point here on so to use that example, if you are saying, okay, we are going to handle your social media management for, you know, client X, and we are going to respond to everything within a minute. Now, that feels quite good. That feels like a good thing. It evokes to me kind of seeing, you know, I don't know, any product you buy, really, and they've got a thing on their website that has a whole list of stuff that's like, you know, that, as you say, are speed and time related, maybe price related. And maybe, you know, sort of, you know, we've got a 5-star award from somewhere, and they're just bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
They all feel good when you see them. They're like a shot of, you know, sugar rush that gets you going. Right, great. Again, bring the toddlers into it. Let's see what we're going in life at the moment. But the reality is, does that, when you dig below the surface, and if you are the competitor that's trying to deal with this stuff, you want to be able to talk to the client and say, okay, a lot of people might come to you and say that you can respond within a minute. Now, are you a company that needs response within a minute? Because if you are, you probably should have that stuff like absolutely sewn up and in-house. Like if you're a, I don't know, like a transport company, or, you know, you're dealing with medical emergencies or something. It's like, this shouldn't be a thing that you're looking as an add-on from someone.
Sure.
This should be core. So therefore, if that's not crucial to you, why are you paying for that? You know, why are you doing all this? Now, you may say this very explicitly to someone. You may do it more sort of stealthily. But actually, it gives you then a chance to sort of, by intimation, draw out the things that are probably more important. You know, the fact that, you know, what are the outcomes that you're trying to reach for? Because is being responded to quickly with something that says, we don't know, we'll come back to you later, useful? No, not sure. I, you know, as a consumer who's just gone at so-and-so, I'm really disappointed with this thing you sent me. What are you going to do about it? You want someone to give you a proper response within, okay, a reasonable time frame. But no one really expects, certainly not from a smaller organization anyway, a response that quickly. So it's a kind of false promise that feels good, as I say, but doesn't actually, you know, deliver at the end of the day. If you have someone else as a competition that's trying to pull it apart, and that's where you want to be positioned, I think, for anyone trying to tell a story, is not positioning yourselves in a way that someone can easily pull apart, but positioning it in a way that says, okay, that's a solid offer. Okay, good. Right. You know, it's good. Michael and I talk a lot about just pitching, hasn't it? You know, we'll pitch in partnership for projects and things and do the day-to-day work. And if you lose out to someone that's good, it just doesn't matter. You're just like, well, they just picked someone that was better. Like, we're good, they're good, they have to make a decision. What you wouldn't want to be doing is losing out to people that clearly, you know, can't offer the stuff. And if we weren't doing our job properly of selling why our abilities are, you know, there, and the same comes for a glasses manufacturer or a mobile phone manufacturer or a restaurant or whatever it is, if you're losing out because you failed to tell the story effectively of all of this stuff, then that's something you can improve. And that's obviously what we're trying to help people do.
So if we want to learn a little bit more about storytelling and try and understand it a little bit better, how can StoryCube help?
Robbie's alluded to this. We've got the 6 key sides, hence why it's a cube. We've got the problem, solution, differentiators, connections, motivations and obstacles. And we can take people through that in different ways. So we have 3 online courses, and people can go through that at their own pace. There's loads of videos in there, there's examples and exercises, and they can go to storycube.co.uk to check that out. But then some people also want to have their hand held as they go through the process, so they can have a chance to join our online sessions, and we do webinars. Myself and Robbie will take people through StoryCube, the framework, how it works, and that can include interactive exercises as well, and a chance to work with other people with similar challenges, other entrepreneurs who are trying to grow their businesses. We do one-to-one coaching because some people get the framework, they've used it, they've gone through the processes, but it's not easy. This stuff doesn't just click overnight, even if they work within marketing and the creative industry. So quite often we'll support people on a monthly basis to take them through their challenges, to help them come up with solutions, but sometimes just to be a sounding board. And then the last piece is that we have sprints. They're like mini online accelerators. And that is probably, for us, the most effective, because it brings together the course, some one-to-one coaching, the webinar sessions that we put together, four over 2 weeks, and it gives everyone a chance who's on that sprint, the cohort, normally around 20 different individuals. They can then work together and understand from each other how they've overcome certain challenges, how they found solutions, and they'll benefit from the greater experience of the group. So that really helps, and they can focus all their efforts on how to be a better storyteller, but from a functional point of view, just as much as from a creative point of view.
Brilliant. Listen, guys, thanks for giving up some of your time. I really appreciate it. Learned an awful lot. Give me the web address again and let me know where your social media bits are.
Storycube.co.uk, and that's probably the best place to start for everyone, and then they can find the course and social media links from there.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, John.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Michael and Robbie for their time. Don't forget to check out the links in the show notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe for more on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, everywhere. It's on all of them. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening.